with her a few weeks ago, and by popular demand, we're bringing her back. It's Suzanne Tabert from Cedar Mountain Herb School, and we're going to be talking about summer medicinals, whether they're herbs, plants, berries, what have you, both in the wild and in the garden. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, the Julies. Thanks for bringing me back. It's always such a thrill.
Oh, for us too. Mm-hmm. We are so looking forward to talking with you again. Well, Suzanne, for listeners who didn't catch you last time, why don't you remind them of a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
I am the director of the Cedar Mountain Herb School. I've been teaching herbal medicine for 39 years. So I'm old and I love what I do. And I started out when I was a little girl. I had an aunt, my Aunt Mary, the world famous Aunt Mary of the Aunt Mary Spearmint. And she took me by the hand and started teaching me about what her mom, who was my great grandma, did to help them be healthy, stay healthy. Because in the early 1900s, there were doctors, but doctors weren't so trusted because they, you know, didn't know as much maybe as they did now. So it was up to the family, right? And so it was passed down. You know, we eat this then, you know, we eat seasonally because this is what we have available. We have this plant and we dry it to make tea in the winter, right? And so that's what Aunt Mary passed down to me. And so it's in my blood, so to speak, to, and she, you know what, she gave me the passion for plants. So I, you know, sometimes I enjoy being with the plants way more than being with the people because they just bring so much and I just adore them. And, you know, and so I turn that into my school. And so I take people out in the wild. I take them into my garden. I teach them about the plants, how to identify them, when to harvest, what parts to harvest, and then the chemicals inside. What is it inside the plants that are creating changes, physiological changes in our body? And then how do we extract them to make very effective herbal medicine? And lifestyle shifts are always part of that. I'm not the one-trick pony. I like to incorporate so much more than just plants in my school.
We're going to get so much to unpack with that statement, and we're going to get to a lot of it, our lifestyles, where we're drawing foods and medicines from. Suzanne and I put together a little outline before this morning, and we decided we would start with the wild ones. And so if you're ready to jump into what's happening now out in the forests and prairies and what have you, what's going on? What are you looking for? What are you foraging for?
Service berries are ripe right now. And they're a plant that's in the rose family. It's a tree. It's kind of a spindly looking, you know, it's not a big shade tree. It's a spindly looking
shrubby
tree.
Shrubby tree kind of.
Shrubby
yes,
thing.
Yes,
yeah.
I'd say so.
Yeah. And the berries are dark purple and just last two Thursdays ago, we were up way up in the mountains and I had my apprentices harvest some, introduced the plant to them and harvested. And the one said that it tastes like a fresh fig, you know, and I had never put that together, and very much so.
I get that. I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
And so.
And the seeds too. Figs are kind of seedy and so are service berries.
Right. But they're, you know, you can eat the berry without worrying about the seeds, you know, like some of them you got to, like Oregon grape berries, you know, you got to pull the seed out of the berry, but this you don't have to. And being in the rose family, all of those berries, whether it's hawthorn, rosehip, service berries, they're full of pectin. Pectin is a polysaccharide that boosts the immune system, helps our immune system to be as robust as it can be. So when we're harvesting the service berries, all we need to do is throw them in a food processor, add honeyed or maple syrup to taste. I'm not a big fan of refined sugars at all, you know. However, you know, I don't put in a lot. I love to really reveal the taste of the berry itself. So I'm minimum. So a cup of berries and maybe a teaspoon to a tablespoon of the sweetener. And that's really to taste. And you whirl that up and put it in your jars. And within minutes, it's jam. because that pectin is released by the food processor, right? And it just, it self gels, it self jams. It's just an amazing thing.
Well, listeners,
oh dear,
excitement. We've got a beeping.
Hold, please.
So, or a sound. Well, we'll continue on and we'll work on it. But I think we need to carry on. Bear with us while we work on this.
Well, you know, what I'm going to say then is the first time I made serviceberry jam, I added chia seeds. Because what's important when you're working with antioxidants as well is that we don't heat them, because that will destroy the antioxidants. Serviceberries are full of antioxidants that can mitigate chronic inflammation, that can help prevent cancers. You know, the antioxidants do so many things. And so, you know, we don't want to cook it. And so the cool thing about chia seeds is when we add it to juices, it makes that juice a jelly or a jam, right? And so I thought, well, here it is, a berry. I'm going to add some chia seeds. So I put like a tablespoon of.
Hi. Yes, we are still broadcasting.
Okay.
All right. Minor We're interruption.
And it's a good thing Suzanne is a teacher. She just kept going. Nobody was going to stop her till everything stopped her.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, listeners. For those of you just joining us, this is KRFY 88.5 Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle, and this is part of Community Radio,
yes.
So thank you for bearing with us.
There's a lot of buttons to push, so oh, we were busy
sure
for a
yes.
bit there.
Yes, anyway, continuing on, we were kind of in serviceberry jam
right.
and pectins.
Right, and I think I said chia seed about 14,000 times.
Yes!
So when I put them in with the service berries and a little bit, I used honey. I whirled them up and I went into my apothecary, which is two rooms away from my kitchen, and to get some jars. And by the time I came back, the service berry jam was a solid brick. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. And so my second batch, I used it without the chia seeds. So what I get then is the polysaccharides, that immune-boosting polysaccharide is intact. All of the phenolic compounds, which are antioxidants, which are so helpful for us, were intact. And then I don't can them. I just put them, you know, put the jars in the refrigerator. And it's good for a week or two. If I make a lot of serviceberry jam, I'm going to put the jars in the freezer, and then they're good for months and months.
I love that idea because I think they, for me, they really aid digestion on top of everything else. The pectin, it's so helpful.
True.
As is chia.
True.
Yes. Love it. Well, serviceberry, yay. And what about drying of serviceberry? We won't spend much more time on it, but is that a thing or not really?
Well, here's the thing. You know, when we dry plants, we're going to lose some of the antioxidants. Not all of them. You know, some of the phenolic compounds will stay intact because the purple of the serviceberry is because of a phenolic compound, which is a type of antioxidant. When we dry the berry, it'll still be there, but there will be other antioxidants that will be destroyed. And there is a micronutrient, a micromineral called selenium that is so important for healthy hair, skin, and nails, healthy sleep, that will be destroyed in the drying as
okay.
well.
So I won't use them dry. We'll make
that's
jam.
That's very interesting because the herb schools, you see a lot of dried
yes.
concoctions on the
yes.
in the jars and whatnot.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a lot of herbs that are dried as well. In fact, in my dehydrator right now, I have oregano that I cut from my garden and I pulled the leaves off yesterday. But what I'm, and I dry them at 95 degrees. And so that's not enough to flash off those terpenes, those essential oils that make that incredible taste. That is antimicrobial, right? And our grandmothers, they and great grandmas, they knew that food is medicine. They just intuited it, right? And back then, everything was organic because this, well, maybe not your listener, grandma, because if you're 30, then there was a lot of, you know, chemicals
yes.
and stuff. But again, I'm old, so my grandma was allergic.
So 95 degrees drying. That's kind of the secret to keeping those important
the terpenes. And yes, some of the antioxidants will be destroyed. But when I'm making a tea, I'm not necessarily going for the antioxidants. Maybe I'm going for alkaloids. Maybe I'm going for the flavor, the terpenes, some of the other vitamins and minerals that aren't destroyed with the heat and the drying.
Sure. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move through the berries.
Okay.
And then we'll move on the berries from the wild and then any herbs that we would want to look for in the wild if you have some. And then we'll take a little break and move on to the garden, the home garden.
Sounds good.
Good. What other great berries can we be looking for right now?
Thimbleberries.
I love them.
Rubus parvifloris. People will call them wild raspberries because they really are. They come off like a raspberry, right? And I love the taste. It has the subtle sweet taste that, you know, when we're walking around, hiking, and sure, we're drinking our water and we're staying hydrated, but we come upon those thimbleberries, and boy, does that ever, that gives you this little burst of sweet and sour, like nature's sweetheart. You know, and last Sunday, my husband and I went to Kootenai Falls.
Beautiful.
And there, oh gosh, it's so gorgeous there. So many, well, there were service berries. There were all kinds of things there, but the thimble berries were ripe and I was picking and, you know, other hikers came by, wanted to know what I'm doing. Am I trying to poison myself? Is that right. Edible? Ah, and so, you know, the leaves of the thimbleberries can be used as well, like raspberry, like the raspberry leaves we grow in the garden. So high in tannins, and pregnant women will use raspberry leaf tea to make the uterus as healthy and robust as it can be, so that the implantation of the egg can be successful, so that the uterus is flexible to grow with that growing baby and then be strong enough to push that baby out. And after that, then to be able to, you know, go back into shape. And the uterus is about the size of your fist. So if you look at your fist, that's the, if you still have your uterus, that's the size of it, right? And if you think about how big those babies are when they come out, they really, that uterus really needs to stretch, and so it needs to be healthy. So these wild thimbleberries are such a boon to pregnant women because that it helps that uterus to just do its job so well.
That's so interesting. I want to go back to the berry for a moment, the thimbleberry, because I've had friends that I've shared thimbleberries with, and some really enjoy the flavor and others don't. And for me, it tastes just like a little bit tomato-ish. Oh. I don't know if you get that out of a thimbleberry, but to me, I get kind of a little bit of like super ripe tomato. Anyway, next time y'all try one, see if you get that.
Power of suggestion. I'm going to only smell taste tomatoes now. You know, I have a field guide for the Pacific Northwest Coast by Pojar and McKinnon, and they say that the berries are insipid, which means they, you know, they're whatever taste, right? And I was always so aghast and insulted by that word.
Yeah, that's rude.
It's so rude. And I personally love the taste. But next time I'm gonna be taking my apprentices out in 2 weeks out into the actually in 3 weeks out into the wild. So we'll look for them. That'll be one of the plants we harvest.
While we're talking about berries, I want to learn a little bit more about elderberries, because if you call an elderberry insipid, that's ignorant. Because that is the most amazing plant. But do you wait till a frost before you pick those elderberries?
Elderberries. No, I don't wait for the frost. When they're dark purple, then they're ready to harvest. And, here's my pet peeve.
Uh-oh.
You know, people will all, you know, if enough people copy and paste some information, it's got to be true, right? And
yes.
I say that sarcastically because... people will say you take your elderberries, you dry them, and then you throw them in a pot with water and you boil the Sam Heck out of them. And then you throw in some sugar and then you call it a syrup that you're going to feed to your kids. There are so many things wrong with that. First of all, when we're drying the berries, we're going to lose some of its medicine. When we boil it, we're going to lose more of the medicine. If we simmer the berries for more than 10 minutes, we're losing some of the medicine. If we add sugar to our strained out decoction, what's going to happen is it's going to depress the immune system because that's what sugar does, right? So that, and so people tell me, oh gosh, you know, you use fresh berries, you're trying to kill everybody. And I, because they're poisonous fresh. Well, no, there are constituents in the seed that can be toxic. However, a seed, as I was taught in botany class, is a bit of a baby in a box with its lunch. So it's a little spark of life, and surrounding it, it has proteins, carbohydrates, vitamins and minerals, everything it needs to get going. And then it has a fortress around it, the seed wall, right? And so we have to mash them to be able to access anything.
I was just going to ask that because, you know, berries, sometimes you have to heat them up to get the juice out, but you mash them to get the
right
the life out of it.
Now, can we mention that there are two types of elderberries, and one is edible and one isn't? The red ones, right? We don't want to be eating those.
Sambucus racemosa is the red elderberries, yes. And we stay away from those. I spent 42 years in Western Washington, and there are thousands of them over there. Here, I've never seen a single red elderberry.
I don't think I have either.
I haven't either.
No.
In Minnesota, where I'm from, lots of red ones.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people will use the flowers of the elderberry. I used to make a beautiful facial cream with the flowers, and so I wanted to make sure I got the blue elderberry flowers. And it's very easy to tell. And this, you know, first of all, the red elderberry flowers in May, and it looks like the inflorescence looks like an upside down ice cream cone or a pyramid, right? And the blue elderberries in June, they start to flower and they look like a floppy pancake.
Oh, interesting.
So
very
totally
different
shapes. Right. And so, you know, that if it's a floppy pancake, you're going to harvest those flowers. And those are wonderful for kind of switching off the fever mechanism inside the body. Hmm. There are plants like yarrow that will raise the body temperature, make us sweat. The air cools us down then. Right. It cools down. It hits the sweat and makes us cool down that way. But elderflowers just shut off that fever mechanism.
Hmm. Really interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's important to note, and thank you, Julie, that you pointed that out, that there are elderberries we can eat and elderberries we can't. To get back to why I haven't died yet from eating fresh elderberries, first of all, I'm not, you know, cracking open the seeds, right? I'm freezing them first, because when you freeze a berry and then thaw it out and you put it, my husband has a press and he presses raspberry juice. I press out the elderberries, and frozen and then thawed out berries will allow you to access more of the juice. And I really want not just the juice, but the skins. The skins are that dark purple. That means lots of phenolic compounds. And around the seed, there's this mucilage. It's like green and slimy. And not to be gross, but it looks like a mini loogie.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
And what that is, it's another one of those polysaccharides. And it's very soothing to soft tissue, and again, it boosts the immune system as well. So you get so many good things. And so what I do to make my elderberry syrup, as it were, is I freeze my berries, and then I pull them off the stems, because it's so much easier that way when they're frozen. And I put them in a bowl, I let them thaw out, and then I have a pounder that my grandfather made for my grandma out of a piece of wood, but you can use a glass jar or something. Well, or you don't want it to be open because those berries will just pop through.
But like a wooden.
A wooden one, right. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you just mash them. And then you fill your jar only halfway because they fill. There's no airspace, right? And you need room for the menstruum. And the menstruum is the liquid that's going to be pulling out the thing, the medicine and the nutrition, right? So halfway up, and then I fill the jar halfway with honey. Mm. So, and then you can stir it. I don't. But what I do, I put on a lid tight and put on a label. Because when you start having, you know, 3, 4, 5, 15 jars on your counter and you don't have labels, I can guarantee you, you won't know what it is. In fact, not to digress, but I shall because it's what I'm really a queen at doing. I found a quart tincture on my apothecary table without a label. I have no idea what it is. So, you know. So there you go. I have to get rid of it. I don't know what it's going to do, right?
That's right. Oh, boy.
So anyways, you put on your label, put it on your counter on a plate because that honey really likes to travel, and especially if you haven't put the lid on all the way. And every couple of days, you turn it upside down. Okay. Every couple of days, you turn it upside down, and you do that for 3 weeks to a month, and then you strain that out, and then you have this incredible elderberry syrup with no heat, with no drying, with polysaccharides, with vitamins and minerals, with antioxidants, and all the other medicines are intact. You put that in your refrigerator, and every time you feel that little tickle or everybody around you is dropping like flies, you can start taking a half a teaspoon at a time of your elderberry syrup. And, you know, one of the mottos of my school is get the medicine to the people in ways they'll enjoy taking so that healing can occur. So not everybody is going to be able to utilize tinctures because they're in recovery or it's against their moral code or religion or what have you. But everybody likes a good sweet
syrup,
right?
Yes, a syrup.
So you put that syrup on your yogurt. You put mm-hmm. that syrup on in your tea, you know, after it cools down some. Yeah. You know, you put that, oh my gosh, my mouth is watering. You make a crisp and you just drizzle that over. Nobody knows they're eating medicine and you're sitting back, you know, just so happy that you're providing this for your family and for your friends in a way that they just really enjoy.
I love this because I have made elderberry syrup the other way and it wasn't that great to tell you the truth. And so I am making notes, and I am going to try that. I can't wait.
Well, let me know what you think.
I will. Now, let's move. Good. Excellent. Elderberry information, and there's plenty of them out there. So, folks, if that's a thing you feel like doing, you know you'll be able to find them. But
not till end of August, early September.
When they're getting ripe. Yeah. Yes, we have a little time. But
Can I just say?
Sure.
Unripe berries, so if they're even a little bit green, they do contain some cyanogenic glycosides that are toxic. But once they're ripe, they no longer do. So it's vitally important to make sure that you don't put any green or light purple berries in your preparations.
Good. Mm-hmm. Now, the Oregon grape for me is challenging. Let's talk about it. I don't like it.
So Oregon grape berries are very sour.
Yes.
And they're slightly bitter.
Yes.
And the bitterness is because of the hydrastine, berberine, and berbamine that's inside them. And those are alkaloids that will kill staph, will kill strep, will kill all kinds of bacteria wherever you put it. So when we're eating the berries, I like making the jam. And with that, you do have to use the chia seeds because there's no pectin in there. Or I could even make a berry tincture and utilize that. And so I'm just mashing my berries, filling a jar halfway like I do with the elderberries, add my 100-proof alcohol, let it, you know, shake it up, let it sit for 2 weeks only, strain it out, and then I can add that to my fizzy water, right? And that's called a shrub. And that way I can utilize that medicine internally. Now, the thing with the Oregon grapes medicine, it does not pass through the digestive system. So it's not, if I have a lung infection, Oregon grape tincture is not going to help, right?
Okay.
So what that'll, there'll be other herbs for that. But if I have leaky gut, right, which means in it, my digestive system, my the alimentary canal, the intestines, there are actual splits in the membranes, and that allows undigested food, metabolites, all kinds of bacteria and things into, you know, our trunk. And we can just not feel good, right? Mm-hmm. And we go to the doctor and get a blood test, and they say, well, we can't really pinpoint an infection, but your eosinophils are raised, which means you have some sort of a simmering infection, right? And there are other signs of leaky gut, right? But that is definitely one of them. And so what Oregon grape does is that it helps to heal those membranes. So closing up those breaks that aren't supposed to be there, and then our body can then heal from that. So an Oregon, so Oregon grape berries will be, tincture will be very mild, right? So we can take that several times a day. If we want to scrape the rhizome bark, a rhizome is an underground stem. If we want to scrape that and utilize the bark only, it contains much more of those alkaloids that I mentioned earlier, and we can tincture those, and you get this like orangey browny tincture that, ooh, it's so bitter. And, but it works so well. And we take that tincture morning and noon and mid-afternoon only, because if we take a bitter herb at night or after 4 o'clock, it stimulates our liver to into digestion. Right. And it's going to stay in our system for a while. And what the liver needs to do is rest at night, just like we do. Mm. The birds rest, right? Bees will rest in little flowers. I've found bees lately in my flowers around dusk.
In the oregano. Oh my gosh. They are going crazy in the oregano.
But they're resting in my flowers, in my garden. Everything rests. Our liver needs to rest as well, because it provides over 500 different functions. That's a lot for one liver, right? And so we don't want to stimulate the liver to digest at night, because it gives it work to do that it was not meant to do at that time. So the liver has its own circadian rhythm. And so that's why I say don't take the Oregon grape tincture after 4 o'clock. Now, what happens if I have, say, a bacterial infection on my skin, or I got MRSA on my skin? It does such a good job at killing MRSA. So I'm going to take my tincture, not the berry tincture, the root bark tincture, and I'm going to soak a cloth or a paper towel and apply that, do a compress, and that will heal, kill bacteria and heal a wound so quickly, because it has epithelial growth factor, and that means it stimulates our body to create tiny little baby skin cells. Think about that, little tiny babies. I bet they're so cute.
That's amazing.
Closes a wound very quickly. Right. So there's so much medicine out in the wild.
Speaking of medicine, you have a book out on medicine.
I will have.
You will?
Well, I have two books out right now. One is Quest for Calm, and that's using herbs and lifestyle shifts to help you to navigate the challenges in the world. And I also have a book called Wild and Beautiful. And that book is 161 recipes for having glowing skin. And the first section is, let's have glowing skin from the inside out. So what does that look like? And there's, you know, all kinds of information in there. And I'm writing a book right now for Lions Press. So they're on the East Coast, and that's Homesteader's Guide to Foraging. And that's going to be a huge book. It's going to be somewhere between 300 and 400 pages. It's going to be a biggie. And I talk about what wildcrafting is, what is important. How do we become very good plant stewards and why that's important? It has a whole chapter on medicine making that anywhere from how to make a tincture, alcohol proofs, the oxymels, elixirs, how to make a flower remedy, how to do hydrosol distillations. It goes on and on. And when I submitted my proposal, I gave them one of my plant monographs, and it was on raspberry. It was on the wild raspberry. And the gal, my editor, came back to me and said, you know, if we want you to do 20 plants. And if you do 20 plants with this much information, that's going to be a 700-page book just on the herbs. And I said, give me a parameter. I need parameters because obviously I talk a lot, right? I got a lot to share. So she took all of my proposal over to you know, the powers that be. And they said, we don't want her to talk about 20 plants. We want her to talk about 50 plants.
Oh, dear.
So I've got 25 plants, and these are all wild plants. So 25, 3,000 words. I'm going to have to figure out how to do that. And then 25 plants, 300 to 400. So a lot of what we're talking about today is going to be in that book. And that's not going to be available till 2027. So, you know,
something to wait for.
Something to wait for.
Where can we find your two books that are published?
If you go on my website, cedarmountainherbs.com, and scroll down the homepage, you can see a clickable link there. And that takes you to Mother Earth News. Those two books are published by Ogden Publishing.
Okay, great. Well, Suzanne, if we don't keep moving, I don't know that we'll get to the domestic garden. let's talk on. Should we move from berries onto native herbs that we might be looking for?
Native herbs in the wild?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mentioned yarrow just a little bit. Interestingly, I put yarrow in my garden. I have a teaching garden. It's 4,000 square foot and counting, because now I have, you know, half whiskey barrels full of plants. And I keep giving my husband more plants to put outside.
And listeners, I have to interrupt, because I visited Suzanne's garden during the Bonner County Gardener Association annual summer garden tour. And what a delight. It was so much fun to see what you've got going on over there. And I think, Julie P., you've been there too.
Yes, I have. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's a really jungle.
Jungle out there.
Yes.
You know, there were about 200 people that came through.
Wow.
And I doled out 7 gallons of herbal lemonade. It was so much fun. Good thing I'm an extrovert, right? Because there were fielding so many questions. It was so much fun. But anyways, I digress once again.
I think I did too.
So yarrow is a very bitter plant. One of its botanical name, one of its common names, is soldier's woundwort. It can help to stop gangrene. So, way back in the Civil War, the doctors there used yarrow as washes when they were in the surgery tents. And you know, back then, they weren't very concerned about cleanliness, and they would use the same saw to cut off someone's leg and not wash it and cut off the next guy's arm. And people were dying, not necessarily from their wounds, but from the gangrene, right? And so soldier's woundwort came, it was readily available everywhere. And so they would use that as a wash to prevent that. And it's a bitter, very bitter, bitter herb that stimulates your saliva, that stimulates the stomach acids to start breaking down the food that we're taking in into a bolus. And it continues stimulating digestion all the way through excretion, right? And so in my garden, though, my garden is a teaching garden. I like doing walks in there. I like my apprentices come and harvest from there. And, you know, I was thinking I was being real funny. And last week I said, okay, everybody grab a leaf of yarrow and chew on it. Cause I thought they were going to go, it's, you know, it's so bitter. And people were chewing and looked at me like, what? And I chewed on a leaf and it wasn't bitter. And I said, well, this is a portrait of when a plant is pampered, it does not have to produce its protection,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't have to have a robust immune system because, oh, I'm going to water it and I'm going to love it and I'm going to give it, you know, horse manure that's aged, and, you know, I'm going to pat its little pretty head. And
the easy life.
It's the easy life,
that's
right?
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and so then we went out into, you know, I've got almost 4 acres there, and so we went out to the where the wild yarrow was, and they tasted it, and then they said, oh, now that's the difference. Now, mm-hmm. the yarrow in the wild, it has to survive
drought,
yes,
hot sun, pests, all kinds of plants growing around it, and so it has to produce terpenes and antioxidants that will repel or kill or make a pest go to sleep and lay off of it. You know, and so it has to, just for its sheer survival, because its point is to make more of itself. So it can't just survive. It needs to thrive.
Boy, it sure does, too. Man, yarrow is everywhere.
Yes.
Yarrow is thriving.
Particularly thriving this year.
Yes, seems to be.
Yeah.
Everything's thriving this year.
Yes.
Yes, yes. All right, yarrow. Yarrow sounds like a good one and very good for us all. Give us another.
Mullein. Now, mullein is the bane of so many people's existence. Oh, it's a weed. And I see on the side of the road, curly mullein, which means it's been sprayed.
Oh,
and right. It always breaks my heart, my passion for herbs heart, because people don't get the medicine of this plant.
And I believe it's the goldfinches love the flower.
Oh.
I think so.
Yes, I think you're right.
Could very well be.
Seed pods that
they're on them when they're going to seed.
Oh.
But they're good for us, too.
They are very good for us. In fact, they're good for opening up the breathing passages and to help with pain as well. And the doctrine of signatures is came about by a group of eclectic doctors back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And they said that if you look at a plant, a shape of a leaf, modeling on the leaf, maybe coloring, there's the way it grows, it's going to tell you what its medicine is. And it's really proven out, you know, with scientific and using the medicines and seeing that it actually does what they were saying. And if you look at a mullein, that it's a biennial, so grows for 2 years. That second year, that flowering stalk is straight and tall and reaching for the sun. Well, in the leaves, there are pain relievers specific to the spine and the back, that kind of pain that then radiates out all over. And so when we're just spraying our mullein and saying it's a weed, then, you know, we're not benefiting from that. My husband and I used to have a house up in Bonner's Ferry. And when we were still living over in Washington, because we were determined to get over here, and it took longer than we thought. But we came back for a visit one time, and our next door neighbor came over very proud of himself. And he says, I made sure I sprayed all your mullein in your field. Oh, we had an 18-acre field.
Oh, boy.
And I had to very emphatically say, don't ever do that again. They say one man's trash is another man's treasure. For me, I was saving those mulleins. I wanted them to grow and thrive there, right? So, mullein, again, the leaves will help to open up the bronchia, the breathing passages, and we can dry those and make a tea. And that tea, you know, when we're coughing, when we're congested, we don't want to just take a tincture. We need water. We need to liquefy what's in the lungs so it's easier for it to come out, right? And so we make a tea and we drink it. And then we start to open that up. We can use the tincture if we're putting it in some water, so a few ounces of water and drinking it. Okay. And one of the times I had COVID a number of times. I'm a champion at getting
and I hear it could COVID. Be another, sorry to interrupt, but I think it's going to be another COVID summer. I just heard that it's kind of moving up through the South right now. So
yeah, my sister-in-law in Chicago just got over COVID. Boy. But she doesn't take herbs, right? But, you know, the last time I had COVID, I utilized the mullein, and it really helped me a lot. And there's another herb we'll talk about later from the garden that helped tremendously.
Right. Now, in order for us to get through the plants, I may ask you to scoot along a little bit on each item. But if people want to know how to prepare these herbs and berries, is that in one of your books? Is that something they can find right now?
I do have an article called Plant Medicine Made Easy.
Okay.
And it's a condensed version of what's going to be in the book, but it gives a lot of good information on that. So you just go on cedarmountainherbs.com.
Look for that.
And click on the menu, look under articles, and then scroll down. There are like 50 different articles free on all kinds of information from all kinds of places as well.
So very good. Well, all right. We've talked about mullein and yarrow. Any other wild ones that are your favorites?
Willow. Mm. Willow is one of my favorites. We already harvested the willow. Great pain reliever. It's an antipyretic, which means it cools down the body, cools down fevers, cools down the inflammation at the site of pain. So we could be playing pickleball and kind of overextend and our wrists hurt, right? Or our elbows will hurt. And we can utilize willow tincture. It's the bark, right? And we can put that right on the wrist,
topical.
Or an oil. It works so very well. And, it contains salicylates. And salicylates are water soluble. And I struggled with, why is my willow oil working as a pain reliever so well? Why? And I've been, I struggled with that for years. And finally, I asked Uncle Google, so what is salicylates solubility? And it's water and oil. Oh, ta-da! So I intuitively knew that I could make an oil and it'll work really well. And then we can, massage the body with that and turn it into salves and put it on our little necks that are hurting our pickleball injuries.
And do you have a favorite oil?
That I use? Yes. Extra virgin olive oil, organic, that's not adulterated, right? You look at it and you want a single source. There are good California olive oils out there. There are brands that are adulterated with other oils. So if it's cheap, probably adulterated. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you have to pay, $150 for a pint of the best olive oil, but there are some, go to Winter Ridge and they've got some choices that are very good, reasonable enough.
Yeah, that can be trusted.
Can be trusted. Yeah. And, it's not like you're making 5 gallons like I used to when I did farmers markets. I would do 5 gallons of salves at a time. That's a lot of olive oil, right? But if we're just making, 4 ounces or a pint, something like that, then, it's doable.
Get the good stuff.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, we may have to regroup. I think we'll take a song break and we'll talk with Suzanne about whether we're going to get to domestic garden or just continue with wild. But let's have a short song break and then we'll be back with you shortly. If you're just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show with Julie Perchinski and me, Julie Calamine. And we're joined this morning by one of our favorites. How appropriate. Well, that was a great song by Jesse Colin Young, and I think Suzanne recommended that song.
I am a fan of late 60s, early 70s. I got stuck back then and never progressed, and I'm happy to do that.
That's so great. A beautiful song, and I hadn't heard it before. Well, listeners, here we are, KRFY, the Tuesday Morning Show, and we're finishing up. We just have a few minutes left this week with Suzanne Tabert from Cedar Mountain Herb School. And in our song break, we decided we're going to focus on just a couple of in-the-garden items. And I think we're inviting Suzanne back again because we feel like we've only touched the surface. Mm. So maybe next week or maybe in a couple of weeks. But we're going to get you back because we didn't even get halfway through.
I do talk. It's my claim to fame.
Fascinating.
In fact, my students say when I open up my mouth, a fire hose of information comes out and they're like, wait, stop, slow down.
Oh, we get it, but it makes you an easy guest.
Thank you.
An easy interview.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you had two or three garden items that you felt were important, and let's jump into that.
So, you know, when I walked outside this morning to let the chickens out, the air smelled like pines and flowers from my garden. This is my season. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love basking in the garden. I love seeing the growth. I love seeing the hummingbirds and all the bees. My Aunt Mary Spearmint is just starting to flower, and the bees are, woo, yay. They're so happy for that, right? Yes. And so I just love being out there. And I have a rose that's a heritage rose. It's a climbing rose that's starting to move across the fence. And that was a rose that my grandma had in her she lived on a house in a house on a hill, and there were 17 concrete steps, and all along there was one of those, you know, those old-fashioned black wrought iron fences that are so gorgeous, and you see them in old towns, right? It was all growing up there. My dad courted my mom, and he would stop and pick some of those roses and give them to her, and well, she married him, thankfully, because here I am.
There you go.
And so I have that in my garden, and next to the, and it's just starting to bloom out right now, but the rose is so wonderful for helping us with navigating grief, and everybody navigates grief in their own way, but for me, it's just, it helps to soften that grief a bit, and there's a lot. There, you know, people are passing away lately and things are happening in the world and all of that. It can create stress and it can create anxiety and grief. So the rose helps us to just soften our hearts and allow some love in and allow, you know, love to come out. And next to that rose, I have my mom's memorial bench. So there are times when I just sit there.
Oh,
and yeah. And
beautiful.
It's just so beautiful. And I just meditate and watch. And I watch my cat, Max, just jump around. And I have a particular chicken who seems to think that she needs to escape and lay her eggs in my garden. So I kind of have to follow her around to find them every day.
It's a calming moment. I can hear that. And one of our topics we did not get to this morning is how to kind of keep the summer calming when there's so much going on. And that's going to have to wait for next time. But we'll get there. However, you had two or three other garden items.
Right.
Kale was one. Yes.
Kale. I just harvested some kale and made kale chips. And that was my breakfast this morning. And so I harvest the kale and, you know, you wash off if they're a little, because aphids, it's a thing.
Dust.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, you wash it off and you tear them into pieces. I don't use the mid rib. So I kind of like pull that rib off. I tear them and put them in a bowl. And then I take a half of a jar of tahini and about a quarter to a third cup of good tamari or liquid aminos. And I have powdered garlic and onions from my garlic and onions last year. I put that in there. And then I put in about a half a cup of nutritional yeast. And I put that in my food processor and whirl that up. And if it's too thick, I add some water, a little bit of lemon juice, not too much lemon juice, but more water to make that kind of not too runny, but, you know, a little runnier than peanut butter.
It can coat the cake.
And you just pour that in and you massage the kale. And I put that, I have little silicone mats to go in my, on my, what do you call that? My things on my dehydrator. Yeah, the racks.
Yes.
Thank you. Postmenopausal moment right there. And I dehydrate that at 115 degrees and it only takes about not even 24 hours. And you get these crispy little kale chips that are so nutritious, so good for you. And just a tiny little slice of the price is what you're going to get in the store.
That's right. Oh, right. And I had a different technique for making my kale chips, but I'm going to go to yours because I did higher heat and I just used olive oil and salt.
Oh.
But I love what you're talking about. I bet the flavor is wonderful.
Well, I'm going to try olive oil and salt next time because I'm always looking for something.
And lower temp. I'll go lower temp
for
sure.
Lower temp.
Lower temp.
110.
No higher than 110.
Right. Okay. And you can add a little cayenne pepper if you want, just a little. You can add, you know, you can do like a sweet and sour even, you know, do some cinnamon and do a little honey.
Well, Suzanne, we're down to about 2 to 3 minutes left, so you better grab another plant, and then we're going to say goodbye.
Garlic. We just harvested our garlic last weekend, and, you know, people use garlic not just for flavor, but for its antimicrobial properties. However, in separate cells, there is an enzyme called alliinase, and then there is a sulfur compound, allein, and in separate cells, and the only way for them to come together to form that sulfur compound that's so antimicrobial, allicin, is to crush the garlic, not just slice it, but you gotta crush them, babies. So you crush them, and then if you put it in your soup too early, it's gonna destroy that. Mm-hmm. So you put it at the very end. So, you know, I love making herbal vinegars with crushed garlic, you know, and there's... And just putting crushed garlic on toast that's already been toasted. And, you know, you can, it's hot. So you put a little nut butter on your toast and some of that crushed garlic. It takes away the heat. It tastes so good.
I bet.
It's wonderful.
And I just use the side of a big chopping knife and go squish.
Perfect.
It's pretty easy. And it comes right out of its skin. It's an easy way to crush that garlic.
Crush that garlic.
Yep.
And remembering to add it at the end, not at the beginning with the onions like a lot of the recipes
say. At the very end, right before you serve.
That's right. Well, what a great tip for everyone to take home and think about doing.
And then that allicin starts to dissipate. It just self-destroys over time. So if you're going to make your fire cider now or later in the season, don't make the gallon, make a pint, because you can always make more fresh, because what you make now is not going to be as effective in January.
And has anyone noticed that when you buy like crushed garlic in the grocery store, it doesn't taste like a freshly crushed clove of garlic?
No.
I think it's lost some, maybe even more.
Yeah, yes. And that allicin is the flavor and the scent.
Okay, we've got a minute left. Suzanne, any parting words, and we will have you back.
Yes, the first weekend in October, I'm going to do a 3-day intensive. So we're going to be in the wild, and we're going to be in my garden, both the veggie garden and the herb garden, and it's going to be a blast, and that'll be up on my website next
week. Excellent. So repeat your website, and we're going to take it away.
CedarMountainHerbs.com.
Okay. Well, thank you, Suzanne Tabor.
It's been
as always, it goes by too quickly when we've got her. Have a great week, folks.
Yes. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye now.